Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. What we have been doing for some months now is exploring the myths about money. Our money system is not what we have been led to believe. The creation of money has been privatized or taken over by a private money cartel. Except for coins, all of our money is now created as loans advanced by private banking institutions, including the private Federal Reserve. Banks create the principal, but not the interest, to service their loans. To find the interest, new loans must continually be taken out, expanding the money supply, inflating prices, and robbing you of the value of your money. We've been specifically looking at a book called The Web of Debt, which unravels the deception and presents a clear picture of the financial abyss towards which we are heading. It then explores workable alternatives, particularly one that was tested in colonial America and is grounded in the best of American economic thought, including the writings of Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and Abraham Lincoln. It helps us to analyze and improve our own financial security, personally and nationally, and to deeply understand the cause of the problems we are personally experiencing financially. At the onset, I give an important credit because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in this program are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of attorney, scholar, and author Ellen Brown, who has 11 books and scores of articles on debt-related matters. I highly recommend her book, The Web of Debt. You should also visit her website by the same name. You could also go to www.kruufm.com under Archives to listen to all of the shows produced on this and other debt-related topics. This particular series is under Life and Debt Web. In the last show, I ended the discussion on what is called the Parasite's Challenge, how to feed on the host without destroying it. Critics charge that warfare, terrorism, and natural disasters on an unprecedented scale are being used to justify massive federal borrowing, while diverting attention from the fact that the economy is drowning in the sea of governmental and consumer debt. And this may be true, but policymakers are doing what they have to do under the current monetary scheme, which is a more fundamental problem. In an upside-down world in which debt is money and money is debt, somebody has to go into debt just to keep money in the system so the economy won't collapse. The old productive virtues, hard work, productivity, and creativity have gone out the window. The new producers of economic growth are borrowers and speculators. Henry C.K. Liu draws an analogy from physics. Quote, whenever credit is issued, money is created. The issuing of credit creates debt on the part of the counterparty, but debt is not money. Credit is. If anything, debt is negative money, a form of financial antimatter. Physicists understand the relationship between matter and antimatter. The collision of matter and antimatter produces annihilation that returns matter and antimatter to pure energy. The same is true with credit and debt, which are related but opposite. The collision of credit and debt will produce an annihilation and return the resultant union to pure financial energy unharnessed for human benefit, end quote. In other words, credit and debt cancel each other out and merge back into the great zero-point field from whence they came. To avoid that result and keep money in the economy, new debt must continually be created. When commercial borrowers aren't creating enough money by borrowing it into existence, the government must take over that function by spending money it doesn't have, justifying its loans in any way it can. Keeping the economy alive means continually finding ways to pump newly created loan money into the system, while concealing the fact that this money has been spun out of thin air. These new loans don't necessarily have to be paid back. New money just has to be circulated, providing a source of funds to pay the extra interest that wasn't lent into existence by the original loans. A variety of alternatives for pumping liquidity into the system have been resorted to by governments and central banks. I'll go over some of these. 1. Drastically lowering interest rates, encouraging borrowers to expand the money supply by going further and further into debt. 2. Instituting tax cuts and rebates that put money into people's pockets. The resulting budget shortfall is made up later with new issues of U.S. bonds, which are bought by the Federal Reserve with dollars printed up for the occasion. 3. Authorizing public works, space exploration, military research, and other projects that will justify massive government borrowing that never gets paid back. 4. Engaging in war as a pretext for borrowing, preferably a war that will drag on. People are willing in times of emergency to allow the government to engage heavily in deficit spending to defend the homeland. 5. Lending to third world countries. If necessary, some of these impossible to repay loans can be quietly forgiven later without repayment. 6. Periodic foreclosures on the loan collateral, transferring the collateral back to the banks, which can then be resold to new borrowers, creating new debt money. The result is the business cycle. Periodic waves of depression that flush away debt with massive defaults and foreclosures, causing the progressive transfer of wealth from debtors to the banks. And 7, manipulation, or sometimes called rigging, of financial markets, including the stock market, in order to keep investor confidence high and encourage further borrowing until savings are heavily invested and real estate is heavily mortgaged, when the default phase of the business cycle can begin again. Now, for many people, this may seem surprising, to rig the stock market. At one time, writes New York Post columnist John Crudell, just mentioning that possibility got a person branded as a conspiracy nut. Quote, "This country, the critics would say, never interferes with its free capital markets. Sure, there's intervention in the currencies markets, and yes, the Federal Reserve does manipulate the bond market and interest rates through word and deed, but never, ever would such action be taken at the core of capitalism, the equity markets, which for better or worse must operate without interference." That's the way the standoff stayed until 1997, when, at the height of the last of the great bubbles, someone in government decided it wanted the world to know that there was someone actually paying attention in case Wall Street could not handle its own problems. The Working Group on Financial Markets, also known as the Plunge Protection Team, suddenly came out of the closet. End quote. In short, manipulation of the stock markets is going on. If you're just tuning in, this is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So now let's look at maintaining this illusion, through rigging the financial markets. Michael Bolser said in Midas in April of 2004, "The Dow is a dead Bananica Republic dictator in full military uniform, propped up in the castle window with a mechanical lever moving the cadaver's arm, waving to the Wall Street crowd." That's the end of the quote. While people, businesses, and local and federal governments were barreling toward bankruptcy, market bulls continued to insist that all was well, and for evidence, they pointed to the robust stock market. It was uncanny, really. Even when there was every reason to think the market was about to crash, somehow it didn't. Bill Murphy, editor of an informative investment website called La Metropole Cafe, described this phenomenon in an October 2005 newsletter using, again, an analogy from The Wizard of Oz. Quote, "Every time it looks like the stock market is on the verge of collapse, it comes back with a vengeance. In May, for example, there were rumors of derivative problems and hedge fund problems, which set up the monster rally into the summer. The London bombings, same deal. Now we just saw Katrina and Rita precipitate rallies. There must be some mechanism at work, like the Wizard of Oz behind a curtain, pulling on strings and pushing buttons." End quote. So what sort of mechanism is involved here? John Crudell wrote that the cat was let out of the bag by George Stephanopoulos, President Clinton's senior advisor on policy and strategy, in the chaos following the World Trade Center attacks. Stephanopoulos blurted out on Good Morning America on September 17, 2001, quote, "The Fed in 1989 created what is called the Plunge Protection Team, which is the Federal Reserve, big major banks, representatives of the New York Stock Exchange and other exchanges, and there they have been meeting informally so far, and they have kind of an informal agreement among major banks to come in and start to buy stock if there appears to be a problem. They have in the past acted more formally. I don't know if you remember, but in 1998, there was a crisis called the long-term capital crisis. It was a major currency trader, and there was a global currency crisis. And they, at the guidance of the Fed, all of the banks got together when that started to collapse and propped up the currency markets. And they have plans in place to consider if the stock markets start to fall." End quote. The Plunge Protection Team, the PPT, is formally called the Working Group on Financial Markets, WGFM, created by President Reagan's executive order in 1988 in response to the October 1987 stock market crash. The WGFM includes the President, the Secretary of the Treasury, the Chairman of the Federal Reserve, the Chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the Chairman of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Its stated purpose is to enhance the integrity, efficiency, orderliness, and competitiveness of our nation's financial markets and maintain investor confidence. According to the order, quote, "To the extent permitted by law and subject to the availability of funds, therefore, the Department of the Treasury shall provide the working group with such administrative and support services as may be necessary for the performance of its functions," end quote. In plain English, taxpayer money is being used to make the markets look healthier than they really are. Treasury funds are made available, but the WGFM is not accountable to Congress and can act from behind closed doors. It not only can, but it must, since if investors were to realize what was going on, they would not fall for the bait. Maintaining investor confidence means keeping investors in the dark about how shaky the market really is. Crudell tracked the shadow history of the PPT in his June 2006 New York Post series. Quote, "Back during a stock market crisis in 1989, a guy named Robert Heller, who had just left the Federal Reserve Board, suggested that the government rig the stock market in times of dire emergency. He didn't use the word rig, but that's what he meant. Proposed as an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, it's a seminal argument that says when a crisis occurs on Wall Street, instead of flooding the entire economy with liquidity and thereby increasing the danger of inflation, the Fed could support the stock market directly by buying market averages in the futures market, thus stabilizing the market as a whole. End quote. The stock market was to be the Roman circus of the 21st century, distracting the masses with pretensions of prosperity. Instead of fixing the problem in the economy, the PPT would just fix the investment casino. Crudell wrote further, quote, over the next few years, whenever the stock market was in trouble, someone seemed to ride to the rescue. Often it appeared to be Goldman Sachs, which just happens to be where newly appointed Treasury Secretary Paulson and former Clinton Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin worked, end quote. For obvious reasons, the mechanism by which the PPT has risen to the rescue isn't detailed on the Fed's website, but some analysts think they know. Michael Bolser, who belongs to an antitrust group called the GATA, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, says that PPT money is funneled through the Fed's primary dealers, a group of favored Wall Street brokerage firms and investment banks. The device used is a form of a loan called a repurchase agreement, or repo, which is a contract for the sale and repurchase of Treasury securities. Bolser explains, quote, it may sound odd, but the Fed occasionally gives money, permanent repos, to its primary dealers, a list of about 30 financial houses, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, etc. They never have to pay this free money back. Thus, the primary dealers will pretty much do whatever the Fed asks if they want to stay in the primary dealers club. The exact mechanism of repo used to support the Dow is simple. The primary dealers get repos in the morning issuance and then buy Dow index futures, a market that is far smaller than the open Dow trading volume. These futures prices then drive the Dow itself because the larger population of investors think the insider future buyers have access to special information and are ahead of the market. Of course, they don't have special information, only special money in the form of repos. End quote. The money used to manipulate the market is, in fact, monopoly money. Funds created from nothing and given for nothing just to prop up the market. Not only is the Dow propped up, but the gold market is held down, since gold is considered a key indicator of inflation. If the gold price were to soar, the Fed would have to increase interest rates to tighten the money supply, impairing the housing market and forcing the government to raise inflation-adjusted payments for Social Security. Most traders who see this manipulation going on don't complain, because they think the Fed is rigging the market to their advantage. But gold investors have routinely been fleeced, and the PPT's secret manipulations created a stock market bubble that would take everyone's savings down when it burst, as bubbles invariably do. Unwary investors have been induced to place risky bets on a nag on its last legs. The people become complacent and accept bad leadership, bad policies, and bad laws because they think it is all working economically. GATA's findings were largely ignored until they were confirmed in a carefully researched report released by John Embry of Sprott Asset Management of Toronto in August of 2004. An update of the report published in the Asia Times in 2005 included an introductory comment that warned, quote, the secrecy and growing involvement of private sector actors threatens to foster enormous moral hazards, end quote. Remember, moral hazard is the risk that the existence of a contract will change the way the parties act in the future. For example, a firm insured from fire may take fewer fire precautions. In this case, the hazard was that banks were taking undue investment and lending risks, believing they would be bailed out from their folly because they always had been in the past. The comment continued, quote, "Major financial institutions may be acting as de facto agencies of the state and thus not competing on a level playing field. There are signs that repeated intervention in recent years has corrupted the system." Close quote. If you are just tuning in, this is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. In a June 2006 article called "Plunge Protection or Enormous Hidden Tax Revenues," Chuck Augustine was more blunt, writing, quote, "Today, the markets are, without doubt, manipulated on a daily basis by the PPT. Government-controlled front companies, such as Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, and many others, collect incredible revenues through market manipulation. Much of this money is probably returned to government coffers. However, enormous sums of money are undoubtedly skimmed by participating companies and individuals. The operation is similar to the mafia-controlled gambling operations in Las Vegas during the 50s and 60s, but much more effective and beneficial to all involved. Unlike the mafia, the PPT has enormous advantages. The operation is immune to investigation or prosecution. There are unlimited funds available through the Treasury and Federal Reserve. It has the ultimate insider trading advantages, and it fully incorporates the spin and disinformation of government-controlled media to sway markets in the desired direction. Any investor can imagine the riches they could find if they knew what direction stocks, commodities, and currencies would move in a single day, especially if they could obtain unlimited funds with which to invest. The PPT not only cheats investors out of trillions of dollars, it also eliminates competition that refuses to be bought through mergers. Very soon now, only global companies and corporations owned and controlled by the NWO elite will exist." End quote. Another regulatory mechanism that is as important and as suspect as the PPT is the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the ESF. The ESF was authorized by Congress to keep sharp swings in the dollar's exchange rate from upsetting financial markets. Market analyst Jim Sinclair writes, quote, "Don't think of the ESF as an investment type or even as a hedge fund. The ESF has no office, traders, or trading desk. It does not exist at all, aside from a fund of money and accounts to keep records. It seems that orders come from the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury or his designate, which could be a partner of one of the international investment banks he comes from, to intervene in markets. Have you ever wondered how these firms seem to be trading for their own accounts on the side of the government's interest? Have you ever wondered how these firms always seem to be profitable in their trading accounts and how they wield such enormous positions? Not only are they executing ESF orders, but in all probability, they are coattailing trades while pretending there is a Chinese wall between ESF orders and their own trading accounts." End quote. This is all highly annoying to investors trying to place their bets based on what the market should be doing, particularly when they are competing with a bottomless source of accounting entry funds. A research firm reporting on the unexpectedly high quarterly profits of Goldman Sachs in 2004 wrote cynically, quote, "Who does Goldman have to thank for the latest outsized quarterly earnings? Its partner in exchange of financing and the proprietary trading operation, Alan Greenspan." End quote. Henry Paulson headed Goldman Sachs before he succeeded to the U.S. Treasury Secretary in June 2006, following in the steps of Robert Rubin, who headed that investment bank before he was appointed Treasury Secretary, just in time for Goldman and other investment banks to capitalize on the drastic devaluation of the Mexican peso in 1995. An October 2006 article in the conservative American Spectator complained that the U.S. Treasury was being turned into Goldman Sachs South. Now, another organization suspected of colluding to rig markets is a private fraternity of big New York banks and investment houses called the Counterparty Risk Management Policy Group, CRMPG. Counterparties are parties to a contract, normally having a conflict of interest. The CRMPG's dealings were exposed in an article reprinted on the GATA website in September of 2006, which was supported by references to the websites of the Federal Reserve and the CRMPG. Author, who went by the name of Joe Stocks, maintained that the CRMPG was set up to bail out its members from financial difficulty by combining forces to manipulate markets, and that it was all being done with the approval of the U.S. government. Bailouts, noted Stocks, have been around for a long time. A series of them occurred in the 1990s, beginning with the Mexican bailout, finalized on the evening Robert Rubin was sworn in as a U.S. Treasury Secretary. This was followed by the 1998 Asian crisis and then by the 1999 bailout of Long-Term Capital Management, LTCM, a giant hedge fund dealing in derivatives. The CRMPG was formed in 1999 to handle the LTCM crisis and to develop a policy that would protect the financial world from another such threat in the future. In May 2002, the SEC expressed concern that a certain major bank could become insolvent due to derivative issues. The problem bank was JP Morgan Chase. By the end of the year, the CRMPG had recommended that a new bank be founded that would be a coordinated effort among the members of the CRMPG. The Federal Reserve and the SEC approved, and JPM's problems suddenly disappeared. A stealth bailout had been engineered. The same year saw a big jump in the use of program trades, large-scale computer-assisted trading of stocks and other securities, using systems in which decisions to buy and sell are triggered automatically by fluctuations in price. The major program traders were members of the CRMPG. Members that had not had large proprietary trading units started them, including Citigroup, which was quoted as saying something to the effect that there was now less risk in trading due to new innovations in the field. New innovations in what? Market rigging? In early 2002, program trading was running at about 25% of all the shares traded on the New York Stock Exchange. By 2006, it was closer to 60%. About a year later, concerns were expressed in the Wall Street Journal that JPM was making huge profits in the risky business of trading its own capital. Quote, profits have been increasing recently due to a small and low-profile group of traders making big bets with the firm's money. Apparently, an 8-man New York team has pulled in more than $100 million of trading profit with the company. Close quote. So we will continue with more concepts of market rigging in the next show. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt-manageable life.